Welcome to Watching Westworld, the officially unofficial podcast for Westworld on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 3, titled The Absence of Field, which, if you're not aware, and I wasn't certainly, The Absence of Field is a line in a poem by a man named Mark Strand. That name might sound familiar to you from last season, called Keeping Things Whole. And it is essentially a poem about the intertwined natures of the part of something or parts of something and the whole of something. And I saw a lot of relevance in that poem when it comes to sort of the makeup of humanity, which is something we've been talking about in Picard as well, especially with that last episode, how, you know, humanity is now a different thing, right? The family of humanity has expanded, and now it encompasses organic life forms and synthetic humanity.
Homo synthetic. Well.
Yeah, and how you kind of need both. The whole is indistinguishable from its parts, and without a single part, the whole doesn't exist. The poem gives you a lot to think about if you read it in its entirety.
It's only 18 lines.
It's a very short poem. Yeah,
the first stanza is where the title comes from. In a field, I am the absence of field. This is always the case. Wherever I am what is missing. Mm-hmm. That's pretty profound, especially when you think about the terms of the host experience, Caleb's experience. It's interesting that Dolores uses traumatic memories of Caleb to kind of trigger his awakening in similar ways that the Reverie code worked in season one to have hosts ruminating on their terrible life experiences. There's a lot of interesting connections. In fact, I thought, because it's the next thing we're probably going to talk about is how we like this episode. I really like this episode. You know, shitty ambulance action aside, I'm really digging the themes they're playing with this season. We're going to do some deep dives on some theories. I think that I'm ready to approach the show on its own terms. I'm happy that we're out of the cowboys and Indians world of Westworld, and we're in the cyborgs and robot limbic systems of the near future. I think this stuff is inherently interesting. There's no one else doing this kind of work in like cautionary robotics and AI and what it means to be human and big data and privacy. There's no one else, like I guess Mr. Robot, but even they were just scratching the surface. They're dealing with like very early 21st century problems, where Westworld's grappling with mid to late 21st century problems.
I know a lot of people are going to jump in here, but what about devs, Aaron? I haven't seen Devs.
Yeah, I saw the first episode of Devs, and I'm like, nope, I can't do this in Westworld at the same time. I cannot be questioning the nature of my reality twice a week. But yes, it is in fact playing a lot in similar playgrounds. I mean, I'm wondering if did I mention this on the podcast last week, that like sometimes society goes through these cycles. Like in the 50s, it was all about UFOs.
Yeah.
And like monsters from space. Then it became zombies, you know, and what was that, the late 60s to like, you know, zombies kind of caught hold of the American population and kind of waves like and we've kind of come back around to robots taking over, which was a theme of a lot of early late the mid 90s science fiction. But always imagine something like cyber, like doing something like, oh, you flip the military control to a robot and look what happens. Whereas the real life enmeshment between humans and AI and robots is a lot more boring, but also sinister at a deeper level. It's not a chrome skeleton coming to kill you. It's a algorithm saying that you're not worth being invested in.
And our own society is sort of building itself into that monster, right? We're essentially turning all the controls over to it, not just like flipping the switch or somebody in a lab somewhere flipping a single switch.
Yeah,
it's like everybody's flipping a switch every day, and it's called social media, and it's called not voting for our privacy and a host of other things.
Yeah, and it's something that's we're doing all voluntarily because it makes our lives better, right? Up until the time that it perhaps won't, when we run out of a runway on this. I think that stuff is inherently fascinating and very cool and frightening.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm coming to terms with what the show is, mm-hmm. and I think it's been a little less tricky on the face of it so far this season. Although I'm about to get into some stuff that is very tricky.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I feel like I share kind of your butthurt that like Nolan and Joy have talked about this being a lot more straightforward of a story, and if any of these theories that we're about to round up pan out, it's anything but. But, yeah. You know, I'm not going to let the internet ruin a show for me. Just like a clever idea and twist executed well is just as good if you see it 3 weeks coming, you know. I am not going to bitch and moan that, oh, my God, why are they taking so long to blah? Because, you know, the reality is, like we talked about Serac, his name means like the tip of the iceberg is one of the mean things you can kind of assign to it. Like the people participating in these podcasts and on the Reddit threads, we are the literal tip of the iceberg. We are the 1% of people who are doing this to ourselves. And I'm not going to hold that against the show. I will hold ambulance based action against the show because that's something they're struggling with. But I'm not going to get pissed about them belaboring the point because, you know, even with all the resources out, some of this, so people can get lost in the weeds of this theorizing. So, yeah.
I feel you. I think season two was a little bit messier than season one because they both dealt with those.
Agreed.
Time twists. Season one did it masterfully. I think season two did it less masterfully. Hopefully they're going to round out a season three with a really nice, satisfying twist.
Yeah.
If that's what they're going for.
Do you want to, speaking of these theories, do you want to do a theory roundup? Because I feel like that's what the real draw of the show is. And I read some real doozies. I hadn't been super impressed with a lot of them up until this point, but I saw some that felt really good and fun. I want to talk about one that I was grasping for on the instant talk and instant take, but I didn't quite have, the references at hand. And one is that, there's a very old season one trailer or a theory that Hale is somehow Arnold's daughter, not Bernard, but Arnold.
Can you refresh me on maybe some of the finer points of that?
Well, so we know Bernard had a cornerstone of loving his deceased child, Charlie. Hmm. We now find out that Hale, like her ex, calls him, you know, she's Charlotte, but he calls her Charlie. It's entirely possible that Ford took the real life relationship that Arnold had with his daughter, Charlie, and turned that into a boy who got sick and died and used that as his tragic backstory. There's not much there. Okay. I mean, there's some other there, like Charlotte's skin tone is very close to the boy Charlie's skin tone. And there's some other like superficial things that people were hanging their hat on that. I noticed that Kim Renfro's opinion, and I think her and Joanna were in accordance with this, that this is just the Lisa and Jonathan kind of like winking at us about, you know, having fun at our expense about that Charlotte Charlie theory from season one.
Could be.
Yeah, I don't know, because the only thing that doesn't make the other evidences were that, like, you know, Hale is apparently very young to be an executive. How would she rise so high in the Daedalus Corporation? Could it be for nepotism? The thing against this theory is it's kind of stretches my credulity that no one ever mentioned, oh, yeah, she's the daughter of one of the park's co-founders. Mm-hmm. But they also made a point that they kind of scrubbed all of Arnold from the archives, too. So I don't know what to make of it. The other theory that I like, because there's so many Hale-Bot theories, man. So many Hale-Bot theories.
Oh, yeah. Every single character that we've seen on screen.
Yes.
With the exception of maybe the tiger from the Raj, it has been theorized to be in Hale's body at this point. So someone's right. Someone is fucking right. And they are going to be back 8 episodes from now to say, yeah. See, motherfuckers.
Someone wrote, the funniest one I saw was that it's Dolores's horse. That's okay. Inside Hale.
You know? I mean, I thought I was making a joke when I said the tiger, but fuck it. I'm theorizing right now that tiger is in Hale's body.
Well, one of the things, so this user on Reddit, Magani, had a theory that Hale-Bot is supposed to, the reason that there's so many similarities, because we were talking about that on Instant Take, right? Like, really hard to pin down what Charlotte's doing here, because Tessa Thompson is probably trying to perform as if she was this person in a body that we're familiar with, but it's very hard to pin her down. It seems like it changes. Like, you know, who is a host that Dolores could be close to, who did a lot of killing, who didn't, like, you know, like, it seems like it could be Angela, but then she got blown up. It could be Teddy, but then he's in robot heaven. Are they lying to us about those rules? But another explanation could be that Dolores took all of her fondest memories or the strengths of all the hosts that she had admired and was close with and turned it into a entirely new creation that we're going to dub Dolores's daughter.
Okay.
So there's a lot of so people pointed out that we've seen Dolores spoon somebody before, and it was Teddy, her lover. But we've also seen a host spoon another host before, and it was Maeve spooning her daughter as they both lay dead in the middle of the maze that was plowed into their field. So there's a connection there. It could be lovers, but it also could be, you know, child parent type of spooning. Yeah. There's also, it makes sense that, you know, I asked on Instant Take, like, what is the significance of Charlotte's personal assistant being very pregnant? Well, it makes sense if you've got, like, you know, an AI birth, you know, an AI offspring there. It's like just naked visual foreshadowing. And then another point to consider is the trailer for this season most prominently featured a Westworldification of the Guns N' Roses hit Sweet Child of Mine. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, and you know, there's also... She talks, the way she talks to her is like, you know, hey, if something happened to me, you know, you've got to be strong. You've got to go on, is something that, you know, a mother might say to their child.
I think they're onto something here. And I have my own theory I've been working on. And some other people, though very few, are giving this much credence.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, they've misgendered the baby. Mm. The baby is actually a boy and the baby is Caleb. And because I do agree that there is a very strong sense of, like, reproduction in this season so far, especially this episode. And if you want to say that a human in a host body could be sort of a birth for a host, and she could be giving this new life to Caleb, someone who was destined to kill himself, apparently, giving him a new lease on life might be equivalent to a birth. And I've got a host of stuff that I can lay out as a case for why it might
build it, because here's my biggest... I like that theory a lot, and it might dovetail into this simulation two worlds theory that I'm about to go on to. But the big problem I have is how is the timeline possibly line up with what we know? You know, we got 90 days to play with. Yeah. Are you thinking that there's, like, a big time skip?
I think that first scene that we see here, this flashback to Hale being turned back on,
mm-hmm.
Is happening way, way, way in the future. And I shouldn't say way, 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 because The Man in Black is happening way, way, way in the future.
Right.
What I mean is after the events of this season. And potentially... So if you look at the timeline fuckery, which is definitely an MO of this series.
Sure.
For the past two seasons, we have opened on the characters who are kind of at the nexus of that timeline fuckery.
Mm.
We opened on Dolores in the first season.
Right.
That whole season was about how she's in two split timelines and ends up back at the same place in each of the timelines.
Mm-hmm.
Season two, we open on Bernard, and they're all waking up in the same manner. And Bernard, obviously, at the nexus of the timeline fuckery last season with the defragged, or the de-addressed memories,
mm-hmm.
Throughout that whole season. So Caleb, we see him waking up from a dream, very much like we see Dolores waking up from her dream, or Bernard waking up from his dream.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at that, like, the way that those characters are portrayed, there's... So there's a lot of other stuff too. There's, like, James Delos. We saw him self-harming, mm-hmm. in the second season, right? And we see that happening with Hale here.
Yeah,
which seems to be symptomatic of a human in a host body.
Yeah, when they print the simulation when they press it in the flesh, things go awry.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff around, like, that reproduction angle. Like, you look at the two mothers in this episode, and there's a very strong theme of it in this episode, mm-hmm. where Caleb's mother is saying, "You're not my son."
Right.
Hale's son is saying, "You're not my mother." There could be some potential here for, like, thematically for this to work, but also if Hale is actually not Nathan's mother at that point, which we know.
Well, there's also, because I also saw some theories that touched on this too, the whole Caleb as a host theory, where her mom says, "I want my son Cal," and he says, "I'm Caleb." And they've played to that too, Charlotte, Charlie, like, you know, that they do like to do that, play with variations on names to show that there's a distinction there.
And then there's also the spooning stuff that you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen that in relation to, like, mother and child.
Sure.
We see that twice in this episode. We see it once with Hale and Charlie, her son, but we also see it with Dolores and Hale. And if you want to take that and say, okay, this is mother and child relationship, I think you could view Caleb as Dolores's son in this new host body.
Interesting.
And the other thing about this reproduction and mother-child relationship is this has to be someone who, inside Hale's body, who is deeply affected by the video that she sees of her, of the old Hale, the human Hale, singing this, "You are my sunshine," to my child, to their child. And with everything we see of Caleb's backstory in this episode, you can make a very strong case that he would be that person.
Interesting.
That would be strongly emotionally affected by, you know, having a mother who, you know, wanted to do her best but wasn't able to because of some reason. And for Hale, it was like essentially taking her eye off the ball of being a mother. Mm-hmm. For Caleb's mom, it would be schizophrenia.
Yeah, the human inside is a part of the Halebot as Dolores's child theory, that Dolores took, like, the best parts of all the hosts she knew, made into a new consciousness, and much the way she remade Bernard from her memories of Arnold and improved upon him, that she also took the entire code from the forge of Charlotte Hale and put that in there too to help her be a better Charlotte Hale, but in a similar way to, like, a host's consciousness fighting through and finding its maze, that the human personality inside the host is doing the same thing to its programming, so, and trying to reassert itself.
I like that better than a lot of the theory, a lot of the stuff that this episode seems to be leaning into, which is, like, somehow the Hale body itself is like having an effect on the psyche of the robot. I don't like that. That was in the after. Whatever they do after the episode.
Yeah.
This they were saying that it was, like, you know, her body somehow having an effect. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I just don't buy that that's
I think
physically possible.
I think it might be complimentary, and, like, because I saw some people calling this the fact that Hale, like, the copy of her source code is inside the Hale bot with whatever other personality, is the being John Malkovich theory. Like much the same way that people were just helpless passengers in John Malkovich's consciousness, or at the end of John Malkovich, that they were locked inside. I think it was a small child, wasn't it? That, like, Hale's kind of in that, and it's driving her crazy, and she's trying to claw herself out. It lines up a lot with how the Hale bot is describing her experience. I thought those were interesting.
There are a couple other reasons why I think it's Caleb. Because everybody's talking about his story with his mom and everything like that. But there's this one scene where everybody's pointing at it and saying, okay, this is a predator. This is someone ruthless. This is someone violent. It could be Teddy. It could be Wyatt. One of the very popular theories now is
it's just Wyatt.
A split between Dolores and Wyatt and those two hosts.
Yeah.
Which I like, and I think that might have some legs. But also, remember, we haven't seen all of Caleb's backstory, and the stuff we have seen has told us that there is a military history here, and he is essentially a super soldier. So
he survived a shot to the head that fractured his skull.
Right. So what are we talking about, a violent person? Like, he's out, you know, he doesn't do the personal stuff, right, on the Rico app.
Uh-huh.
But is that because he doesn't want to, or because he's scared of what he might do if he does?
Mm.
Like, he could very much be a predator, and we just don't know it yet.
Adjacent. Well, I mean, anytime if you, like, he is a super soldier. Like, you can have full control of his adrenal system and jack him full of adrenaline, and there's all kinds of stuff you could do with that. I want to talk about something else that someone noticed. This was from Reddit, too. You, Scotty Sewell, he had this he noticed something way back in season one that implies that Ford knew about Serac and Insight and his plan to take over Delos and Charlotte's involvement way back then. So go back to season one, episode seven, and about the 23-minute mark, 22:47, if this is to be believed. But those are always different because HBO puts trailers in front of stuff. And but anyway, it's the part where Hale is going to demonstrate how Clementine could go rogue and attack a guest, which is all part of her ploy to get Bernard fired. Ford walks in a room while she is looking at herself, reflection of herself in a mirror or glass interface. And he says, Miss Hale, I was not aware that those with your level of insight needed any more reflection. And the way I watched the scene and the way Anthony Hopkins hits that insight, you can hear it. Like he does the pause, he kind of tilts his head. He underlines the insight. Which implies that Ford was aware of Serac and all the bullshit he was trying to do. We also know that Delos originally shared data with Serac's company almost two decades ago. So it's not like this came out of nowhere. Like we know that Dr. Ford was very, very perceptive about things going in and out of his park and especially his host and the data. So it makes sense that he actually knew about this. And it implies that maybe we're still somewhat on Ford's narrative. That things are still unfolding as he foresaw, like an Emperor Palpatine type of way.
Is it Ford in Hale's body? Is that where you're going with this?
No, I wouldn't go there. Probably okay. In Bernard's body, though, at some point. Yeah, and then this is the one that I like the best, the two worlds theory, because I've been since episode two thinking there's two different timelines. There's two different timelines. There's got to be two different timelines. Yeah. And this was from you, user Lee Robbie on Reddit. And they said the big twist of season is going to be the season is not cutting between two timelines, but between two worlds, the real world and Rehoboam's simulated world. So the primary evidence of this is there are two versions of Charlotte Hale's message that she sends to Nathan. One is very abrupt. It's tonally kind of or emotionally kind of muted. And one is a lot more detail, and there's a lot more crying. There's a lot more of Hale saying that she's a terrible mother, and you know, and people are saying like the one is the simulation of what Hale would do inside it, and the second is the reality of what she recorded. And there's subtle differences in there. And this is why Serac wants Delos's data, because we've been talking about this whole the three episodes so far is that they have two halves of the equation, you know. Westworld's got the perfect simulation, the outside of flesh from direct observation of people's inmost thoughts. And Serac has got the extrapolated simulation from people's apparent behaviors. And if you put those together in the real world, you put those together, you could have a perfect simulation. So that's why, you know, he got a little taste of that 20 years ago and he wants more of the whole thing. And they think that instead of going back and forth in timelines, you're going to go back and forth between simulations and the real world. So there's a couple other pieces of evidence that like the simulation apparently doesn't understand humans' accurate motivations, especially when they're benevolent. For example, it couldn't fathom Lee Sizemore helping Maeve out of a sense of just altruism. It had to have some kind of angle. Underestimating the human capacity to improve or change at all, which is also a weakness of Delos's approach. Like one of the things that Jim Delos's son, Logan. One of the things Logan said is like, you know, the one thing about humans is they can never change. Well, we know that's bullshit. There's also perhaps other hints this person's on that that there's characters dressed in all white and all black, but they switch back and forth and people are thinking that that might be a clue. And the one that one of my favorites is the first time we see Hale watch her message to Nathan. We get this reverse camera angle looking at her through one of those big transparent monitors you're always complaining about. Mm-hmm. But it frames her in almost perfect letterbox ratio, which is this show's long term shorthand for you're in a simulation.
Yeah.
I'm off the two timelines theory and I'm now on the two simulation theory. And it's all robo hobo behind it, which credit to Adam from the Instant Take for coming up with that. But I'm no longer saying Rehoboam. It's all robo hobo from here on out.
Okay.
Easier to say, more fun.
Absolutely. I don't know if this is like just a natural progression of the series or what, but I was also looking at like some of the scenes where we see anomalies, as recorded by Rehoboam, Robohobo. And every scene that we see that comes right after one of these anomalies is shown to us is host focused, except for the Caleb one, which to me says maybe there's some possible room for Caleb to be a host here. Maybe that's that's the language of the show trying to tell us something about Caleb. It could also just be that I think at this point Caleb is literally the only non-host character that we follow, with the exception of maybe Serac, but
one of the minor plot points of the two worlds theory is that Serac is a generated avatar of Robohobo, because when we see him in the what we think is the real world, he's always like a hologram in someone's glasses, and the time that we see him interact with someone in physical space, it's with a host that was in a simulation and might still be in a simulation.
Right.
So it could be that like Serac is an entirely not existed at all. It's a creation of Robohobo. I like that a lot too.
And I think like the final piece of evidence I want to put forth is just the title of this episode and its integration into this poem and the meaning of the poem. Because if we're talking about like the parts being the whole, and without the parts, you can't have the whole, I feel like they might be leaning on that with like a, hey, we need the parts of humanity that made humans human in the past, but we also need to move past that, and we need to get to these hosts, where if you want to say, okay, let's put Caleb into a host body, that could be the beginning, that could be the genesis of this new version of the human race. This new synthesis of the parts and the whole.
No, I like that. And also that, like, if you think about the poem in terms of when I'm in a field, I'm the absence of field. Like, from a computer's perspective, if you fed that logic into him, like, it would try to extrapolate the being of a human from its absence in a field. Like, how the hell would you possibly do that? And it feels like there's a little bit of like what Rehoboam is trying to do, or Robohobo is trying to do, and what Delos is trying to do, where they're, you know, it's kind of like the old blind man. There are three blind men feeling a elephant, and one feels the tail and thinks it must be like some kind of donkey, and one feels its legs and thinks it must be a tree, and the other one feels its trunk and thinks it's a snake. Like, both these AIs are coming at humanity, but it's from a very imperfect understanding. They're trying to understand humanity from its absence inside a simulation.
So hopefully we've convinced you that you know nothing and we know nothing.
Yeah.
We won't know anything until the end of the season.
But hopefully we got this framework out of the way, so like we can just refer to this stuff when we're in the recap, because sometimes a recap gets bogged down with all the different theorizing and which piece of evidence fits into where. So hey, before we get to the episode, I want to mention something we're trying brand new. This is beta technology here at Bald Move. We're doing a podcast for the movie Goldeneye, for the Bald Movie this week. And Netflix unveiled this feature called Netflix Party, where you can get a whole bunch of people together online and watch something simultaneously. And Jim and I are going to host a Netflix party to watch Goldeneye tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's only for club members. Everyone can enjoy our movie review that's going to come out on Thursday. But this party is only for club members. I know a lot of club members watch and enjoy and listen to our Westworld podcast. So if that describes you and you want to watch the best Pierce Brosnan version of James Bond ever, Goldeneye.
Easily.
If you want to see
the best Pierce Brosnan one and my favorite James Bond, even though it might not be the best James Bond movie.
If you want to see an early entry in the Sean Bean always dies meme, join us tonight as we watch this thing live with a whole bunch of Bald Move fans. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully the technology works. But it'll be a lot of fun. Check out, if you're interested, there'll be a post on baldmove.com about 10 minutes before 7. So you can all kind of get queued up and ready to go. And we'll have a license to stream. License to Netflix Party. A 00 whatever. Okay, let's get to the episode.
Okay, let's do it. We start off with a flashback to the revolt in the park, and Hale leaves a message for someone named Nathan, who we don't currently know. on one of the hosts.
I did want to point out real quick that Nathan Hale was a revolutionary spy, an American soldier during the Revolutionary War. He volunteered for an intelligence gathering mission in New York City, but was captured behind lines by the British and hung. And his final words, which have become famous, are, "I regret that I have but one life to lose for my country." Right. Super ironic, because we're dealing with people that have, in simulations, infinite lives to dispose of. And if they're hosts, as many lives as they have bodies and marbles. So I thought that was, I don't know what they're doing with that. Also, the fact that Hale herself is a spy behind enemy lines, I thought that was really interesting.
Later, possibly now, possibly sometime in the future, Hale is recreated by Dolores. Someone else is put into Hale's body and told that they have a role to play, and Dolores sends Hale home.
So that means there's definitely at some point been two Hale bodies. The one that Bernard constructed for Dolores inside Westworld, and left the island with, and this was constructed in Arnold's home.
Right.
There's two Charlotte sleeves running around, which also further complicates the timelines and simulation theory, because you just could have two separate bodies.
Right. Yeah. And they've definitely played with that stuff in the past, I think.
For sure.
And with Charlotte herself, you know, one of them being a host and one of them being her. We kind of talked about all of the stuff I have to say about that scene. So let's move on to
the one other thing. The Kim Renfro pointed this out, that Bernard's marbles design has changed.
It's red now, yeah.
Well, last season, human hosts were red, human guests inside a host body were red marbles, and the hosts themselves had black marbles. And now you've got Bernard, it's a black marble speckled with red.
Yeah.
And to me, I was looking at this, and to me, it looks like a normal host thing that's been speckled with blood. Like it got physically yanked out of his head, maybe, and not a neat, nice way.
This could also indicate that this is not the same timeline, because if you look at Bernard, if you look at all those marbles in the sack at the end of season two, they're all gray.
This is either a retcon or a suggesting that Bernard is an amalgam of the artificial and the human, which is definitely a concept they're going to be continuing to play with.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in here that might be in there to make you think that this is in a specific time, or that we're dealing with like right after they get out of the park. But I don't know that that's necessarily true. There's just a lot of stuff like she tried to kill us when they're talking about Hale.
Mm-hmm.
But we have so much time left. We have five episodes left in this season. So we could get pretty far down the road, and Hale does, like, maybe Dolores does create a Hale, and Hale goes off the reservation and tries to kill both her and Caleb, and then Caleb gets put into this host, and then, you know, he feels like he's a host now, and there's just a lot of stuff that you could take in multiple ways, which is the story of this show.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get elevated scrutiny in San Francisco, and Hale gets to see this Dolores riot control robot in action, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that thing fire up.
Can you wait to see 300 of them? Because that's how many they have.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I thought for sure that I would see a theory I made a joke about the Thermopylae and 300, the Spartans and all that. I thought sure somebody would do something with these obviously military robots, like, who do nothing but fucking...
the perfect thing is right here. All you got to do is take that shot where Caleb's robot falls off the building and just insert him kicking. Insert Leonidas kicking before
This is simulation. I thought sure there'd be something, somebody do something with some deep knowledge of what they got on the History Channel or watching Frank Miller's bullshit.
And so Hale's told that someone has successfully pulled off a hostile buyout of Delos, and she demands they find out who it is,
and the delicious part is it's her. She doesn't know it yet, but we've met the enemy, and it is herself.
I do love how that unfolds in this episode.
Yeah.
How by the end she's realized that the person they're looking for is also looking for them. Oh, and she's like the spy, and he doesn't know she's the spy, but now she knows she's the spy.
I don't see how the hell he cannot know that she's the spy.
Well, she's a second, right? She's a double agent at this point.
Mm-hmm, right. But what I'm saying is I don't understand how he doesn't know. Okay, you're right. I don't understand how he doesn't know that she's gone off the reservation. Like, how right. does, if Robo Hobo knows that she is in the middle of all these divergences, and her behavior has to be diverting wildly from what the expected behavior of Charlotte Hale would be, how would he be surprised? Maybe he's not. Like, it's like there's this if he knows about the simulation, like, it's entirely possible that, you know, this is just him gaining evidence, and he's going to simulate Maeve being the perfect heat seeking missile for this and run her until she's got a plan and then unleash her into the real world. I don't know, because it does add a chilling new dimension to what he said to Maeve about, you know, the war hasn't begun and no one knows about it, but it's already been lost. The only way you can say that is if he simulated this out hundreds and thousands of times within Robo Hobo, and it all points out to, you know, there's no way to win. Yeah. It's the only way you can speak in that terms of, like, the future being so certain, unless you're actually talking time travel, which I don't think this show's even insane enough to add to the mix. You throw a little dark in this show and I give up.
Right. So then we go back to Caleb cradling an injured Dolores from the previous time we saw them. The paramedics show up to take her to the hospital, and before they can get there, a couple of fake cops show up. They try and capture her. There's a god-awful fight scene, and Dolores manages to wake up in time to save them both.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb wants to know what's going on here, but Dolores tells him, look, you're better off not knowing. Also, you need to change your name and disappear. And then she drives away in the cop car.
Isn't it wild that the hosts have no platelets? How the hell do they stop bleeding?
I don't know.
Maybe they have synthetic platelets.
It weaves back together.
It doesn't seem like it's that it does that. But I thought, so this hints that Caleb is more than just a regular grunt. He's either a combat medic or maybe some kind of special forces type that has, you know, kind of has to multi-role that kind of thing, because he knows how to start a blood transfusion. He knows, like, basic medical care. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. What's not interesting is this fight scene.
Yeah,
we talked about it a lot in the instant take.
Yeah.
I just want to say that the fight between Jesse and Badger in Breaking Bad, the helicopter bitch fight, was even better than this.
Yeah, yeah. Weightier emotional stakes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're looking for an Aaron Paul fight, go watch that one instead.
Also, this police escort Noriko giving him effectively an advance warning, does that blow up the idea that this is all controlled, like the Rico app is controlled by Robo Hobo, or is it just another layer of intrigue that this is what it wants to happen?
Good question.
Because it's like
how you would distinguish between the two at this point.
It's like a spidey sense. Like, anytime that he's wanted or they're onto him, it just alerts him to the fact that, like, hey, there's a high value target in the area and it's you.
So here's what I don't understand. So the app reports him as being 12 feet from the target.
Yeah.
Why 12 feet? Is it really just using, like, a pretty poor resolution GPS?
It could be, or it could be referring to Dolores. Like, they're not quite 12 feet away in the ambulance, but they're not right on top of each other either.
It's later. when he goes to the hospital.
Then, yeah, they're just using, he's inside a building. They don't have full GPS coordinates, and they're fudging things with the Wi-Fi mesh. And
yeah, I guess they're, like, tracking his phone, but not a great resolution. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. If he's outside, they'd have him down to a half meter, but
I thought it was funny, though. I thought at first that this was a hit on him and they were going to try and kill him. Which maybe it would have turned out that way. But I was thinking, well, if that's a hit, you just accept it and report it as job done and you're off the hook, right?
I guess. But Rico's outside the law, too. Like,
oh, yeah,
that gets you paid. Fuck yeah. But you might be going to a basic prison sentence. I don't know.
Maybe. Like I said, I really love the style of this stuff. Like, the look of everything is really cool. The music is amazing. It really brings an atmosphere to it.
Oh, yeah. Ramin is knocking it out of the park yet again.
On the simulation theory, I'm wondering if the streets being so bare don't have something to do with this potentially being a simulation.
It does fit in with that, yep.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to compare it too much to Picard, but we just watched an episode of Picard where a simulation was sort of stripped down. And you see that from time to time, right? Like, you can't get full fidelity inside a simulation.
Oh, Maeve play...
the Maeve stuff.
Yeah, she proved that last episode.
Right, so you could see, well, okay, we can't totally simulate everyone in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
But we can give you this weird artificial version, and maybe we can simulate it enough to where... Maybe we can do some tricks to where you wouldn't even notice it.
Right, like if you can alter Kayla's programming to the extent that he doesn't notice the absence of all the people that should be around.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then Hale gets a strange sound in her voicemail and a report about Serac, the man behind the hostile buyout. He's completely invisible. He's also the richest man in the world. And she heads home, gets another strange voicemail. And when she gets home, there's a man named Jake in her apartment. He reminds her that she has a son she forgot about. And she goes upstairs to apologize to him and tuck him into bed.
Doesn't this also imply the existence of timelines? Because if she had been... If this was from the present day, like 90 days out from the park, and I think it's implied. Well, but he says, I give you some time out of from escaping that park that must have fucked you up. But it's wild that she forgot. Like, I get forgetting about her son, but when someone asks her about it, the fact she goes, who? It's really weird.
It's super weird that A, she remembers him, but not her son. And mm-hmm. B, yeah, the timeline is strange here because, like, if she's been, it's clear that she has been back, right? Because she promised to pick the kid up.
Yeah.
So he's had some communication with her at this point. And I don't know if that was via Dolores inside Hale. Mm. And she came back and sort of did some things as Hale first.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to Hale talking to her assistant, and they're talking about Serac being this black hole who's invisible, yet he has all this money and power. That dovetails nicely with the Serac being a completely artificial being that doesn't exist on paper anywhere, and also ties into the title of the episode where you're talking about, a black hole's literally defined by its absence in space-time. And Serac is this, he's the absence of the field that's being detected. I thought that,
I like that
really interesting in light of the two world theory.
There's also some really beautiful stuff here. That first shot where the Charlotte's standing in front of, this dome over the water.
The Delos campus.
The reflection
campus.
Makes it into an eye.
Mm-hmm.
It's just breathtaking imagery in the show.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yeah.
I guess let's keep rolling here. A couple of Delos executives tell Hale that Maeve's pearl was stolen.
There's one other thing I want to talk about the scene where she goes to talk to Nathan, and he does the "You're not my mommy" and all that kind of stuff, and she spoons him in almost exactly the same way that she was later spooned herself by Dolores. But there's a throwaway line here where Nathan says he wants to see a real elephant, and she explains they've gone extinct, which is a radical reversal of the progress we've made in the early 21st century. But is this another Game of Thrones joke? Like, the terrible last season of Game of Thrones is defined in part by its lack of elephants that were promised. Is this yet another, like, well, there's no more elephants. No elephants in the budget. Here's your
maybe.
Toy.
Maybe. I don't know.
Because I think we found out in season one the horses are extinct, which I don't see how in the world you could go from millions of horses to zero horses and, like, I don't know what kind of horse apocalypse hit, some kind of, some kind of Ebola for horses, and we just didn't care to stop it. Like, how the hell would all the horses go extinct? But
I don't know.
Lost to elephants, too. Damn. Bad century for quadrupeds. Watch out.
All right. So a couple of Delos executives tell Hale that Maeve's pearl was stolen and it was an inside job. She needs some help and heads out to find Dolores. And in the hotel where she waits for Dolores, she's self-harming to pass the time and gets another strange tonal voice message. When Dolores sees her state, the state of Hale, she takes her to a hotel room, cleans her up, and tries to assuage her growing disassociation between her mind and body. And Hale tells Dolores that Serac, and is instructed to find him and kill him, all while keeping control over Delos, which requires the visit to an old friend.
It's gotta be William. It's gotta be William.
Think so?
I mean, who else would have any kind of sway over the board? Who would you describe as an old friend, like, who is still kind of kicking around and is noticeably absent from the action so far this season? I think it's that it's going to be William for sure.
Yeah, which means we're potentially missing some time here, or things are jumping around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows?
We also, this is kind of a, I think, confirmation that Dolores was not behind the theft of Maeve from Westworld, because it took her by surprise to find out that, you know, Maeve had gone missing. They also said that here's another clue to the other four marbles. Three marbles. Well, I guess four, because we don't know who's in Hale for sure. The Delos employee identifies them as low-level side quest units. So what is that? Who can that role at? And they distinguish that from Maeve, because Maeve was like a madam. She was like a, I don't know, a higher level thing. Would Lawrence be considered a side quest? Because he seemed like he was the leader of a bandit group.
Yeah.
Would Teddy be a side quest? So Teddy might be a side quest, but he's in robot heaven. It would imply that, well, like, certainly Wyatt you couldn't describe as a side quest. Especially since Wyatt was actually Dolores, never mind. Angela? I don't know enough about Angela to know, like, what...
Yeah, but, I'm going to feel pretty betrayed if Angela comes back. So here's the thing. We talked about this a lot in Season 2. You can effectively recreate any of the hosts simply by re-engineering them the way that Bernard was re-engineered as Arnold.
Use your perfect memory of them, get fidelity, and then you've cloned them, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know that anybody's off the table here.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, Angela would be a side quest. Hector and Armistice might be.
Yeah, they're for sure second banana follower type characters.
Though we definitely think we saw the Hector we know in last episode inside the park still. So,
but that that was a simulation though.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So Jesus. All that shit's those bets totally are off the table.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm trying to think of, like, they're fast and loose enough with the side character versus main character that it could almost be anybody, like outside of Dolores and some people like that. I don't know who else could be considered side, but that's a little tiny clue for us.
I feel like the sheriff was not a side quest. He was meant to be sort of a main quest, like you follow him out to the desert or whatever.
Yeah, and he's like one, like the people that are coming and offering you the quests, like as you're stepping off the train, probably are considered main characters.
Yeah, like that's the thing. I don't even know what the park would consider a main quest, because in like MMOs and stuff, yeah, you have your main storylines, but then you also have, you know, tons of side quests. But what does that mean in a park where you're there specifically to make your own journey?
Right.
Right. Not follow someone else's. I don't know what a side quest means in that context.
Yeah, I don't know. There's also some interesting visual motifs in the background, like when Dolores is talking to Hale and fixing her up or sitting on the bed with her. In the background, there's a statue of two identical figures dancing, and they're like mirrored identically.
Yeah.
Which is pretty. So is that to me implies that there is some kind of mirroring going on here with Dolores and Hale. Like perhaps the theory that Dolores is kind of like the fusion of Wyatt, her woke self, and woke Dolores and her Wyatt, her synthesis of all those personalities, and Hale is like Dolores 1.0, like pre non Wyatt Dolores.
Yeah, I've seen this. I'm not sure I buy that in context of like all the Predator stuff that's happening in this episode.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Hale turning into a Predator. I never got that from the original Dolores.
Nah, totally.
It was only after Wyatt was put in there, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, there's still some legs on that theory, and I think, like, this is one of them, the imagery and stuff like that, but I'm very much on the Caleb is in there theory.
Right, right.
And there's some other stuff in this scene that, you know, maybe doesn't relate directly to that, but I wanted to talk about, like, this idea that the host body itself could somehow infect the psyche or the mind inside of it. That to me, that doesn't interest me, I guess. I don't know how like the physical form of a thing, other than like looking in the mirror, seeing yourself and going, okay, well, this is what I am, and sort of adapting to that would have its effect. I don't know that it would like drive you crazy simply to be inside of a body that was different from what you expected, like a residual self-image from The Matrix, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's something they played a lot with, like, movies in the 80s. Like, I remember there's one where a supermodel got her brain swapped, got in a car accident, got her brain swapped by some woman who had a stroke, and she was a very, like, plain woman, and the mismatch between their bodies drove them crazy. I think there was a Twilight episode.
I mean, there's a Jumanji
episode. Well, there's also, like, the, you know, like, you get a serial killer's heart transplant, yeah, and now you become murderous. But, and there's, I don't know, like, I think it works if Hale is literally inside, like, her entire code is inside, yeah, there, and, like, you've got that, the fake it till you make it thing going on, and you're seeing your reflection, and it matches with you, but the other person's seeing the reflection, it doesn't match, so gradually you can take control over the situation.
Do they need to walk on eggshells here with potential transgender allegory? Because I think that could definitely get
in the
mix here.
I don't know. I'm not a trans person, so I wouldn't say what is and isn't offensive. But on the ultimate defense is that these aren't humans the way we understand them, and the concept of male and female is even murkier than it is with our own, you know, applied to our own biology. And, you know, gender roles, like, if you can swap a biological sex as easy as it is in a 5-minute procedure of moving one marble from one sleeve to another, like, it's the same stuff in Altered Carbon. Like, what does it mean to be bisexual, gay, whatever, when you can be a man, you can be a woman, you can try them out like fucking sports cars.
Right. And that's my point. Like, are they intentionally going in that direction, or are they aware that there's potential for that? I imagine they're aware that these waters could get muddy, right?
Could be.
And that they need to sort of understand where they're going with this and not do things haphazardly. Otherwise,
yeah,
could probably offend a lot of people.
Yeah. If you tread on someone's experience and it doesn't jive with them, and then they complain about it, then that's, you stepped in a landmine field of mud.
Like I said, all right, moving on. Caleb sees that he's wanted on RICO and goes to see his mom one last time before he bugs out. But before he can get out, he's grabbed by a couple goons. I'll leave it there for now. Then we go back over to Dolores checking in with host Martin as she puts in her AR contact lens. She tells Martin to find out what Liam knows about Ciroc and get information on Caleb. And he says that Caleb's life expectancy just went down. Mm-hmm. And Dolores rushes off to find him.
There's something I want to point out about Charlotte's, the wounds on her body. There's a couple theories about, like, what those might represent from the previous scene. This scene here where Dolores is walking out and talking to, what'd you say his name was?
I think it's Martin.
Martin. I've got it written down at some point. I'll stumble across my notes. But she's walking past this fountain assembly from the hotel, and it looks exactly like the wound pattern on Charlotte. Also, people have pointed out, I don't know if I see this as exact, but these tattoos are reminiscent of the aberrations Robo Hobo is seeing. These, like, spikes with, like, the data point flying off of them. This, like, you know, circle with the two lines flying off of it could represent this divergence that she's carving onto herself.
Yeah, gotta find out more about that before we get too deep into it.
Mm-hmm. Or it could be that he's, like, gone American Vandal and he's just doing stylized dicks all over. Yeah. Robo Hobo's doing, he's just got a, he likes,
I just looked at her arm and it was dick.
Just like drawing things look like dicks.
I think they told Liam that Dolores is dead, right?
They told Liam that Dolores is dead.
Yeah, because
That would be the neatest explanation.
Martin says, oh, he's taking, Loverboy's taking it well or whatever.
Yeah. You're right. That's the neatest explanation.
Yeah. So the goons take Caleb to the skyscraper he's been working at, and they turn on his olfactory implant, threaten to make him fly if he doesn't tell them where Dolores is. There's my Game of Thrones reference for this evening. Caleb's robot partner tries to save him, but fails. And then his other robot partner, Dolores, shows up and succeeds.
Do you think there's an actual material difference between the military grade drip and the civilian one? Because, but if I'm a super sinister AI that wants to control humanity, I might say there is, in much the same way that Intel claimed there's a difference between their Pentium 2 and Celeron processors. But like, it's the exact same hardware. Maybe it's just a software setting, because like, it seems like RoboHobo would be leaving a lot on the table to let humans have, you know, like, well, there's a very small percentage of humans. You have full control of their body's autonomous systems. And then everybody else, it just, you know, uses it to trip. And I get a data feed from them passively. I don't know. I'm wondering if we're going to see a scene where like the robots can like if Dolores is in game, is she can kill humanity just by grabbing one massive slider, hitting Control A on an iPad and just sliding it to heart attack mode. I mean, you can make a large fraction of humanity extinct by doing that.
Good. Certainly could.
Good first strike. I mean, hell, if it's only a military, you could wipe out every American with combat experience that way, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would help if you're fighting an army of humans.
Mm-hmm.
Then Caleb wants to know what Dolores is into. She offers to buy him breakfast, and we kind of skip back to Hale here, where Hale wakes up and goes back to Delos, where she sees the message that the real Hale left for Nathan, which includes the song "You Are My Sunshine." Then she has to go pick her son up at the park, and she gets another strange message before finding a sexual predator targeting Nathan. And she deals the fuck with that.
Yeah, it's really disturbing seeing this guy literally groom this child. And then,
yeah, that petting.
No,
I didn't like anything about that.
It's pretty fucking sinister, and she deals with it. And you know, every once in a while, you can cheer for the host doing some ultra violence and mayhem. And I'm not going to shed any tears for this guy. And Nathan gets a new dog. Win, win, win.
Yeah. That's a weird circumstance to get a dog in, but
but you know what? You got a kid at that age, they're not going to ask questions.
That's true.
Oh yeah, JC, he said you'd like it better. He wanted you to have it. You know.
You got at least like 7 years to come up with a lie good enough to assuage their curiosity.
He'll, at 37 years old, he'll tell that story to someone at a bar and be like, wait, that's because I've had that experience where I'll tell a childhood experience and I realize how fucking crazy it was because I was 5 years old when it happened. How the hell would I know that this is unusual? But then you start telling people looking at you like, what? You know, happens a lot when you grow up in a religious cult. The things you just take as universal experiences, not as universal as you think.
All right. Dolores takes
the one other thing I want to point out that I got from the behind the scenes, behind the episode thing for HBO, and I thought was really clever, is every time they show like Dolores interacting with Caleb here, they set like this mesh, like all these angles of steel and glass behind them that looks like a web, and it does, and they're trying to suggest that, you know, Dolores is like the spider inviting the fly into the parlor, which I didn't get that from their interactions, but one of the things that, you know, Dolores left the park with a head of steam wanting to murder all humanity, and we think she's turned a corner because she's met guys like Caleb. It could be that she's just using and taking advantage of him because she has very few allies that she and all the allies she has, she sees as irreplaceable and not expendable. So as much as I like this kind of relationship that's forming between Caleb and Dolores, the creators framing this as a predatory thing has me on high alert for that stuff. So
yeah, I'm with you. Mentioning the angles and the visuals of this, I also wanted to note just how amazing the City of Arts and Sciences is in Spain.
Yeah,
it's where they filmed a lot of these scenes. Those buildings you see that are just like very strange looking, very abstract looking, are in this place, which apparently exists, and it's fucking amazing.
Do you know anything?
I had no idea this was on our planet.
This is on my bullet points of research, but there's so many of these theories I didn't get around to it. But like, is it a real town? Is it like a model town? Is it like a university campus?
Well, they call it the City of Arts and Sciences. I don't know, actually.
I was wondering, like, it's kind of like, is it like a Chernobyl deal where like that city was built intentionally advanced and futuristic because it was going to be like, you know, a pilot site for all Soviet reactors, or
City of Arts Sciences, according to Wikipedia, is an architectural and cultural complex in the city of Valencia, Spain.
So it's just some kind of campus.
Yeah. It's like if you were to go to the Amazon campus or whatever, and they got these big bubbles, right?
Yeah, the balls.
Something like that. But I don't know. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to look at.
Yeah, it looks like going to one of those old world fairs where everything's like super in the future. In the future, there'll be no right angles. Everything will be chrome and glass.
I'm
Concrete has
cool.
been made illegal.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dolores takes Caleb to the place where his mother first exhibited her schizophrenia symptoms and shows him a transcript of the conversation he had that day to impress upon him the dangers of Rehoboam having everyone's data. Then Dolores takes him to a pier where Rehoboam says he'll kill himself 10 or 12 years from now, and exactly how the system is intentionally pushing him toward that outcome. Dolores asks him whether he wants to run or stay and help her start a revolution by cutting Rehoboam's cord, and he decides to stay.
Yeah, this is all interesting stuff because it's a real treat for freeze framing these next few sec or minutes because he asserts that like you could be forgiven by thinking that like Robo Hobo got all this information before like the data collection and privacy acts were passed. But if you look at the transcript that's scanned, it's stamped with like this should be redacted and omitted by like the DPIPA or like Data Protection and Information Privacy Act, probably is what that stands for. And yet Rehoboam's got it anyway. So it seems like much like in our current timeline, these companies collecting data, they have no ethical or moral guidance. They roll with whatever we can get away with. And if we can get your information, when I first thought, I thought that they were implying that they were able to accurately simulate Caleb's existence back to extrapolate this stuff. But it doesn't seem like it seems like they just stole this information. This is illegal information to possess. I wonder what kind of audit you could run on a system that keeps detailed records on 360 million people to ensure that they're complying with any kind of data privacy.
You'd have to have some kind of AI to run that audit.
Yeah, I feel like some of these laws in Europe they're passing is just essentially they're mandating an extra checkbox on any checkout forum, you know, like because that's the thing, like you can write in say under the Data Privacy Act of Germany 2014 or whatever, I want you to delete all of my data. But how the fuck can you prove that? Like, what is the what? What's the you know? If I go down to the city county and I sell, you know, tell them, hey, give me my original birth certificate, and I burn it, then I know it's done. But or at least the original. But how do you do that with data?
I don't think there's a real way to do that. It's more like a thing where like if anything comes up in the future around those data privacy laws and companies get caught
I
doing things
see.
on a mass scale,
It's.
we could certainly go back and target specific information and say, was this there or is this still there?
And that's then it's like so if you catch them, it's kind of like Al Capone. You don't catch them for
Exactly.
racketeering. You catch them for tax evasion. So when you pull these people over in their car, you're like, hey, let me look at your private data. Oh, there's a whole bunch of data you weren't supposed to collect. And then you slap them with a fine or.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be like $2 million.
The
The
fine, oh
fine.
yeah.
Yeah, data's worth 2.5 billion, but it'll be a 1 or 2 million fine, just so you know it's serious.
Right. Yeah, I really like this scene, especially the part where they get to the pier and she starts unfolding how he's being manipulated, his entire life is being sort of routed in a
Yeah.
specific direction.
Oh, and the specific dialogue she says that the reason they feed everyone's raw data is to create a mirror world of this world. This is like one of the course the two worlds theory is right there because they've established it. This in fact, it's almost insultingly obvious if you go back to that lunatic raving at the party about it's all a simulation. We're in a simulation of a simulation. How fucked is that? Like we've been saying this whole season, they're like begging us to look at the simulation and what they told us last episode is they will lie to us about whether we're in a simulation or not with the rationalization that the host or guest does not know it's a simulation, so the audience doesn't either.
And they'll lie to us with the very language that they established in the previous season means we're in a
Yes,
simulation.
exactly. They're going to add a new sub rule to that so there's a lot of there's a lot of stuff. If you freeze frame here, you can see this guy's whole life experience, history from the time he graduated high school. He enlisted in 42. He sustained a skull fracture in 48, 6 years later. So then a year later, apparently he got discharged because of that. There is a formative event marked the death of his friend, Francis. Then a day later, he's referred to the psych evaluation treatment center. In 53, he had a romantic relationship for 2 months that was ended by subject. But then sinisterly, in 55, he had a romantic relationship last 4.5 months, terminated by system intervention.
Reproduction not approved.
Yeah, they just sent a hot Chad to her apartment delivering pizza, and the rest was history.
I was gonna say they were in the middle of the lovemaking that would have resulted in a child, and they just turned on his
the drip
implant.
Yeah, they dripped him out of there.
all the way up. That's why he disconnected it.
Yeah, it's not just because like Dolores makes it sound like it's just, you know, they got the simulations, and if it looks like you're going to hit the skids, that, you know, they can just not do anything to intervene. And, you know, because that's the thing. This is a real life problem. What do you do with like a kid that is born and their parents are mentally ill or drug addicts or whatever reason they're don't know how to properly care and raise for a child? You know, you can either abandon them to their fate and hope they don't reproduce and make more of them, or you can try to intervene as early as possible. And I think there's like kind of a philosophical divide in the world right now about which of those two approaches is better for society. And Robo-Hobo is just fully on the one side. That's like, you know what? We're going to have people sing and people going to swim. Let's focus all the money on the swimmers.
Yeah.
It's essentially a soft eugenics program. It sounds like pretty scary stuff.
It is interesting, you know, because they don't essentially make him homeless, right? He's got a job. Mm-hmm. He's got a house. Rehoboam's not trying to actively kill him.
Yeah.
But it's just not giving him opportunities that he would normally have.
Well,
and I guess in this case, yeah, it's actively
active,
shutting
yeah.
down.
It's also actively fucking with his job and his because it says that he's only allowed to have physical labor. So like if he's got
but only to a degree, it's, you know, it's not trying to like I said, make him homeless or
yeah.
just get rid of him entirely. It's
yeah.
sort of just keeping him at a level that is appropriate to how Rehoboam sees him.
That makes sense. Like if Rico is being operated by the Robo-Hobo, it makes sense to roll that level of control right into it. But then again, there's a couple things where it seems like that's not that it's like the Robo-Hobo would be working against himself. Like, you know, whenever it gives him an alert that he's about to get snatched. Mm-hmm. But then again, maybe this is a simulation and they're just fucking with the iterations of Caleb here.
Could be. This scene is very complex. It's in its storylines in that Westworld way, because like we have to realize in this scene, this series of scenes here, we're seeing a flashback to when he was 8, and we're seeing flash forwards to a future that may or may not exist, depending on how much control Rehoboam exerts over his life, right?
That is complicated. Something else that's complicated is my feelings about how like this is kind of, is this an ambulance fight or not? Dolores makes a big deal about Caleb choosing not to give her up, but to me, I feel like it was a slight storytelling stumble that he didn't have anything to give her up to. You know, the fact that
he didn't know where she was.
No, yeah. He doesn't know anything about her. He knows a rough description and that he occupied physical space. And if he had said that, he would have been able to not say anything else about it. You know, where'd she got off? She went off in a stolen police car. You know, can't you guys fucking track that shit? I don't know. I thought that it was weird that they could have given him something, like some kind of clue, like she left behind, I don't know, a hotel key or something that he was keeping. But the fact
that he
kept his mouth shut when the only thing he could verify is, yeah, there was a blonde lady who's good with guns. Presumably something that Rico people know, the Serac knows.
You're right about that. He doesn't have that information, but what if this is a simulation?
Yeah.
And what if they're essentially doing to him what they were doing to Maeve last episode, trying to get the location of the real Dolores out in the real world?
That could be.
Which he does actually know.
Huh. But he doesn't know he knows?
Right.
Interesting. Or crazy also.
Right. Super crazy. I don't know if that theory is even plausible. But
I do love how they did the Westworld remix when he's deciding to, you know, be who he wants to be. And it's also it's wrapped up in so many levels of irony, because he says, "You're the first real thing that's happened to me in a long time," when she's completely synthetic and artificial, and that he's pledging his cause to the revolution when last we knew the revolution involved the extinction of humanity. And I think this sinister kind of Westworld remix, it's kind
but
of
if he ends up in a hot host body, yeah, does he care?
That's true.
Also, I gotta say, he's really speaking Dolores' language here when he's like, "Oh, at least this way I get to decide who I want to be. I get to make that choice," because, man, that was what Dolores was all about in the first season, right? Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it's like a choice is only a choice if it's an informed one, and it's not.
Fair.
She's manipulating him, and the spider imagery just makes that all the more stark. So I'm very curious to see this relationship proceed in the future, to see if it actually matures into something. Because, like, even the person that she valued and respected, like Teddy, she was not above using and abusing and reprogramming. So
I'm hoping she's learned a lesson from that.
Yeah, we'll see. She could just
literally caused him to kill himself, and now we're talking about another guy who's apparently going to be prone to killing himself. So
right,
maybe don't pull the same tricks with him, right?
Or she could just not give a shit because, you know, Teddy blowing his brains out got her what she wanted, which is freedom. So maybe more manipulation and brains being blown out, and you just do that until you get to the top.
That's just the Wyatt part of her talking.
You just
I have a question.
Yeah.
A line that I don't understand in this scene, when she says, like, "Just like you did at your old job, I'm going to," what does she say? Like, turn the signal off.
I'm going to cut the line.
How they react.
I'm guessing that, like, but this isn't a scene they showed that, like, you know, part of him laying fiber optic is disconnecting the old signal. And like, if there was some kind of like scene in the first episode where he like wryly observes to his robot partner, like, "This is my favorite part of the job," and he cuts one line before they lay the other, and you see a whole like floor full of people in white collar jobs, like, looking, because it is funny. I've been a system administrator in a large building, and anytime we knew we were going to take down a switch, it was funny to watch like a floor full of 50 people, like a fucking prairie dog colony. Everyone looks up simultaneously and like, what's going on?
Pokes their head up.
Yeah, it's like an
queue.
Invisible bomb went off. And it's like they could have thrown something like that, but it's kind of feels, I don't know. Is this another hint that we got two worlds, that she's talking about what Caleb did in the simulation? And
it does feel very disconnected.
Yeah. It feels like there's a scene missing, because that is something that could have happened and done, but they're referencing something we're not familiar with. But I think that's what they're talking about.
Any guesses on how Dolores plans to cut the cord, as she says?
I don't. Blowing up the big ball? Like, because she said that...
That's more than cutting the cord, though, right? Like, that would destroy probably Rehoboam's...
I just don't know.
Memory stores.
The thing that I don't understand, because she says the way they've engineered society, they've made it so easy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Society's pretty fucking resilient, you know, at least in the short term. Like, I don't think you cut Rehoboam and then like, "Oh God, how do we give people jobs? How do we transport food? What do we do with the people who are already employed?" And how it seems like that's something that would... this phenomenon I just described, the people like looking up and shaking, like, instead of that happening all at once, it would happen over the course of 20 years as the perfect society that Robo Hobo was trying to build started to get frayed and tattered and mud holes walked in it. And it goes into that kind of chaos, but immediate chaos. I don't know.
Yeah. The phrase "cutting the cord" to me means cutting off some vital component. Some vital piece of where it gets its information, as opposed to like destroying the thing in its entirety. But
But how does cutting Robo Hobo off from the internet or whatever, like, if she did succeed in doing it, that connection would be redundant out the ass. There's like, you know, fully redundant systems, probably in triplicate, quadruplicate, and like, how would that even work? And how long would it take a technician to reconnect that line?
That's exactly why I'm still asking this question, because clearly she means something other than like literally unplugging the thing.
Yeah.
She means cutting off a source of information that it uses that is vital to its operation that couldn't be easily restored.
She's going to order.
And I don't know what that is yet.
A high target hit on all of humanity through the Rico app.
Oh, Jesus.
It's a reverse. So it's a reverse John Wick.
Oh, I was gonna say it's very reminiscent of when Clementine, like the horseman of the apocalypse, rode through the crowd of hosts.
Oh yeah,
last season.
Yeah, you just take off.
They just all turn on each other and start murdering.
Yeah.
Except for the ones who don't do personal stuff.
They made it so easy.
Okay, Hale watches the message to Nathan again and cries while she does so. Then she cracks the code of the voicemail messages and uses it to get a meeting with Serac, who, where she realizes that her role in Delos is actually a mole, and Serac wants what Hale promised him, the data from the park. Hale says she just needs time.
I thought this...
Which, there was kind of a mirror here of the first episode, or the first scene in the episode,
yeah,
where Dolores says, we have very little time.
Yeah.
And Serac says that to her.
Yeah. I don't know if I... The other, I guess, this minor problem I had this episode is I thought this coded password came together entirely too conveniently. You know, where I was watching the first time, I didn't even realize.
Oh, thought so?
Yeah. Like she realizes that these tones all form together into a password that she has to play on this unlisted number that says it's disconnected. Like... there's a couple of leaps there that I wish I had a better idea of why Hale was doing that. Or okay, maybe they could have made explicit that she doesn't understand why she's doing it. There's some kind of residual Hale knocking around there that just kind of like through some kind of muscle memory, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely how I read it, but I understand why you would say there isn't really any indication in there, because there's not.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's something I wish there was a little bit more, but maybe they will. I mean, that's the thing with... These really twisty plots, they always can have like that, Sixth Sense montage where you see Bruce Willis jiggling all the red handle doors and it's all makes sense now. So
yeah, speaking of twists, so in this scene, when she gets on the phone, we hear her voice as if it were coming through the phone. And I don't know what to make of that.
I'm not even sure what you're talking about. I didn't catch that. That subtle
distinction.
When
she's saying like hello, when she's trying to talk to whoever's on the line, we hear her voice sort of digitized as if it were coming through a telephone.
Is it implied? Because they do that sometimes in The Matrix, and always implies like surveillance. Like whenever like you see Carrie Ann Moss talking to somebody, and it sounds like their voice is coming through. Maybe it's implying that, but then, you know, shit, she's talking to Mr. Robo Hobo. Like, of course, it's being recorded and surveilled and all that.
Right. I mean, everything in the society is being recorded at all times. So
yeah. How awkward would it have been if she happens to trigger this meeting code and Serac is like taking a shit or he's getting his junk waxed? Like, is he just ready to take a simulated phone call?
Other day with his junk waxing. It's every other day.
He likes it smooth.
You just can't call the guy without interrupting his junk wax.
A man wiping his ass with silk definitely likes to be dolphin smooth from the neck down, at least. I just wonder, like, maybe that's evidence that he is a simulation. Like, anyone that can be literally on
junk
call, like, no matter, he's not drinking, he's not fucking, he's not sleeping, he's just ready to take a simulated phone call anytime. Because he's not
fair.
A real person. But yeah, there's a like this is one of the reasons I think this episode is really brilliant, because finding this Charlotte, who's this kind of inexperienced, awkward host herself, like finding her situation got a hell of a lot more complicated in the span of about 30 seconds. And she's like trying to fake it.
It's real good.
The other added dimension is that Serac has to know. Or at least strongly suspect that she is the divergence.
Yeah, he's got the world's most predictive, most advanced predictive machine on the ever to exist. So, like, if he doesn't know,
he also says,
wrong with his machine.
Don't think you're the only person I control. What's got a big is he referring to Maeve, the Maeve countermeasure, or are there others that he might be able to ally with?
Certainly could be others.
Then the final thing. Did you notice the smoke trail coming out of Hale's head from the right side in the final, like as it's dissolving? There's this like, some people said it looked like letters, but it looks like some people started to say it was a lens flare. But to me, it looks like there was some kind of vapor trailing off of her head at the very end. Almost
smoking.
Well, it's kind of sort of the effect they use very like it would be like the very beginning of a simulation dissolving effect. You know, like what happened to Maeve when she was inside the simulation and started falling apart.
I had to go back and look at that.
Yeah, because it's like maybe it is a lens flare and it bounced off the swamp gas and reflected the light of Venus and it was a weather balloon behind her. Maybe. Uh-huh. But to me, it looks like a very subtle digital kind of wispy smoke. Maybe we got the smoke monster from Lost just to add some more crazy shit to the party.
Why not?
Yeah, I don't know.
But that's it for the episode.
Yeah. Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Okay, let's get the feedback then. We can be sent feedback at westworld@baldmove.com. You can also follow us along on all the social medias at baldmove. Lots of people sending in kind of overlapping and redundant Hailbot theories, and some people sent just entire Wikipedia articles with bibliographies, and I read it all, but unfortunately I can't read it all. Like, one person's email was longer than my entire show outline. And I appreciate all the research and stuff. It's just it's hard to know what to do with those things.
How about if the elephant from the Raj is in Hail?
The elephant from the Raj?
The elephant's just straight up lying about no more elephants being around.
It's a conspiracy. They
self-preservation.
Yeah. Yeah. They know where all the ivory's been beamed off to. All right, let's get to westworld@baldmove.com. First up is Adam. He's the one that pointed out the first that I saw. This is discussed on Reddit. The Hail's body carvings looked a lot like Robo Hobo's elevated scrutiny spikes we see at the beginning of most episodes. Yeah, I definitely can see it. And that would, you know, she's herself a divergence and she's experiencing a divergence inside her. That would all make sense. We'll see if that continues to be a motif, kind of like the I wonder if that's like the if they'll use that imagery the way they use the maze imagery to just suggest hosts waking up to a like being in some kind of false illusory existence, like humans waking up to the same, like they're trapped inside of a robot body, or like James Delos, yeah, mutilating himself. That was like, you know, maybe the mistake is you need to let that play out. You need to let the you need to let the violent delights have the violent ends, and then they sort themselves out. So let's move on to Drew's email. The story in the diner is totally plausible by today's standards. There is a news story back in 2014 about a guy who received a piece of junk mail from Office Max addressed to his name and daughter killed in car crash. That was the address, the addressee. And he gives me this LA Times article that explains it. And the man obviously was understandably taken aback by the fact the company would gather that piece of information for customer profiling purposes. Office Max denied any knowledge of it happening and downplayed it by saying the junk mail was managed by a third party. And it never was really followed up on. Then he also forwarded me a story from 2012 about how Target knew a guy's teenage daughter was pregnant before he did through her shopping habits.
Yeah, I've seen stories about that.
Yeah, like they put together her like buying pregnancy tests and baby diapers and registering for certain things. Like in I thought and sent her some kind of like baby shower registration, blew up her spot. Yeah, no, we're going to definitely. I'm surprised. I would imagine that we'd see more of that, except for I think they're really good at suppressing it. They're really good at throwing that shit out. Because they don't, I mean, this is me getting very conspiratorial, but like, fucking prove me wrong. Yeah, that's how good philosophy works. Show me how it can't be. But seriously, like, this should happen a lot more often, right? They got a vested interest in us not being aware of the full creepy realizations of how much they know about us, like voluntarily. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, you know, most of us probably have something on our phones that track our physical location all the time so we can play fucking Pokemon or use Google Maps or leave a Yelp review, right? Like, they gotta have so much.
They stuff the details of that into the places they know we won't read, like the terms of service.
Exactly. They know they are the fucking scary version of Santa Claus, man. Joel, in the after credits scene of Westworld season 2, we see Host trying to bring William quote unquote back. The world we see is dilapidated in what could be the aftermath of a major war years in the past of that moment. With Serac saying that the war has already been lost in this season 3 episode, do you think that they're laying the breadcrumbs for the eventual war slash downfall of humanity? It seems that Serac is making the same mistake that Delos did by trying to control Maeve. I think the show has proven that humans trying to control hosts never ends well for them. Also, since we saw Emily testing him for fidelity, we also could also learn this week that the guest data and what we'd have to assume host data is out there and Dolores is the key to unlocking it. I mean, yeah, with her holding the encryption key in her head, that is sure to come to pass.
I mean, I've seen Independence Day. I know that humanity will not go quietly into the night. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, if you try and overthrow humanity and destroy them, they will put up a fight and there will be a war. And it'll be a major war because there are a lot of us.
See, I said this, that I had this idea in like episode 1, or no, this was in the preseason podcast even, that the reason the hosts are bringing William back in this far shattered Earth future is because Dolores or whatever her faction represents realized that they had this cornerstone error mistake in how they dealt with William. And in just the same way that their Delos simulation was trying to figure out how he could have a different relationship with Logan, that was his point of no return, that she's trying to figure out how to undo this mistake that they've made, or maybe they need to bring back a human to learn from humanity what they don't have as host or something. There's something. I mean, the other thing is, like, how pissed off would you be if after 5 seasons you found out that this was all literally an advanced simulation that Ford and Dolores were doing to find a winning play to have humans and robots coexist peacefully? And the end of the series is essentially them figuring it all out, and then you see Dolores wake up in season 1 and she's going to execute that plan.
I don't like the last part of that. I think you could do the rest of it. What I don't want to happen is sort of this. I mean, I guess we wouldn't see it. We would just imply that that was the start of it. As long as it's emotionally resonant, I think you could do just about any ending.
Yeah, you could do it. That would be as okay long as it doesn't suck, you can do about anything.
Yeah. But there are a lot of ways to make that ending suck and not a lot of ways to make it not suck.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's like the simulation sidesteps the one problem I have with the theory, which is what in the world could Dolores do hundreds of years after all this has happened, or dozens of years, that would undo it? Like, if you're simulating Delos, you're trying to find a path where, you know, you understand that Logan event and you can have him be full fidelity and you can run as many versions of Jim Delos through that as you want. You can press as many to them in the flesh as you want, because you can always just go back and try to the drawing board. In the real world, you can't. In the real world, you can't. The only way it would make sense to do something to roll it back is if it was actually being simulated. But yeah, I'm with you. It's hard to imagine a way they can make that work and not be silly, but we'll see. Okay, I forget. I think we interrupted Joel here. He talks about he was talking about Dolores being the key to unlocking the host and guest data. Says this further points to host winning the war as Serac predicts and trying to bring back humans. The real question, I guess, would be why bring them back, especially William, who's not exactly been a friend to them, unless he would be their check, as Dolores thought Bernard would keep her in check. Yeah, that's. So I guess this dovetails really nicely in the conversation we just had, and also a theory that I've been having for a long time, which is Bernard is going to be the villain of this season because he's trying to uphold a system that's fundamentally corrupt and enslaves humanity to the way the hosts were enslaved inside Westworld. So it could be that Dolores thinks she needs Bernard, and Bernard fucks everything up. So she realizes what she really needs is a sawed off asshole of a human, William.
Yeah, and I mean that, like we talked about with the differences in color of Bernard's pearl last season and this season, it could be a timeline thing where they have already tried this and Bernard fucked it up, and so they had to take Bernard's pearl back out,
give it a paint job, give it a
right. And if, you know, if it is Caleb and Hale's body, then him saying like, oh, he tried to stop us, like.
Yeah,
that would work there too, because in both timelines he's kind of tried to stop him. And
yeah. Next up, Ahmed says Dolores says that until the Data Insight or the Data Act, Insight was able to take data freely and feed it into Robo Hobo. Now that the Data Act is in effect, Serac knows he needs to be able to predict all human interactions so he can get their data. Cue the Westworld guest data by implementing the guest data found in Rehoboam, or how do they say it in the show?
Rehoboam.
Yeah, that's right. I should have stuck with Robo Hobo. They can perform a perfect fidelity for humans by this method. Is Rehoboam currently producing perfect fidelity? Also, when did OG Hale meet Serac? That's a good question, because Serac Insight apparently got its first data from Delos Corporation 2 decades ago. Mm-hmm. Charlotte looks like she would be about 5 years old. No, she's older than she's in her late 30s. She'd be a teenager then. There you go. Arnold's daughter. She's there kicking around her dad's office. The slick silk wiping ass guy walks in and goes, hey, how would you like to instantly be super important and make a lot of money? And she's like, yeah, I want to rebel against my dad. He spends all his time with the host anyway. He's really attracted to this stupid blonde host, and I can't get any time. And there you go. That's the plot. Uh-huh. It's the plot. And Hale's repeating it by not spending time with her kid. The history is repeat. You can't get out of it. It's a loop you're on. Oh, my God. New favorite theory. But no, I think Ahmed is like, that's what we've been talking about for the early parts of the season, is that Delos and Insight are two sides of the same coin, and they're looking at humanity through opposite ends of like the telescope. You know, one is looking at, has all their inmost thoughts and data scans, but it's in a highly simulated artificial environment. And the other has inductive reasoning facts based on people's actual behavior in the real world. And if you just put those two together, you could have a perfect simulation. But I don't think they got it yet. That's why you've got all the divergences that RoboHobo is spinning its wheels about. John.
Yeah, the thing that I wonder about that is, they make it clear that like this is not a great data set, right? Because it is, and I think they say this in the after the episode stuff, that Nolan and Joy basically say they've seen sort of the worst of humanity, the shitty parts of humanity unleashed in the park. So that's what they have on record. You feed that into the system, does that give you an accurate picture of humanity? I don't think so. And I think Dolores is starting to realize that that might not be the case either when she meets up with Caleb.
I wonder if it has something to do with the system's mistaken belief that humans can't change. Like, yeah. If you study the wealthiest, most comfortable people, their change index has to be very low. Why would they change something that's working successfully? Where if you hit, you know, where people do change is when they hit like rock bottom. The old phrase is like, change happens when the discomfort of staying as is worse than the pain and uncertainty of change itself. So if you're a billionaire and you're taking these, you know, wild murder fantasy vacations at Westworld and you're having a ball and you have no material wants, there's no impetus to like change something up and make big changes in yourself. If something, you experience a reversal, it's the world that's wrong, not you. Whereas, you know, if you're a person like Caleb, you hit rock bottom, hit the skids. Jesus, I gotta make some changes. I gotta do something different. I gotta get my score up. I wonder if that kind of gives a hint of what kind of blind spots they have in human data.
Could be.
John's got a thought for us. Jim asked this week on Instant Talk about how putting a pearl into Hale's body would somehow make her become Hale or be confused about being Hale. So this is something you talked about, like, you know, this mind-body connection theory you didn't understand. John says, it bugged me too. I don't know what they're getting at with that. They've never shown us what happens when the host's internal image of themselves doesn't match with their outer body. The only swap you've ever seen is when Dolores took over Hale's body. In Altered Carbon, Takeshi Kovacs uses the mirror immediately after resleeving to force the internal image of himself out of his mind and to accept a new sleeve. But that's just cognitive dissonance. You wouldn't start becoming the person whose body you're in. Maybe if the hosts knew the real person, they would start remembering them with perfect fidelity, and that would make it happen. Ooh, that's interesting. Or maybe whoever is in there had to study the person they are a lot more than we saw depicted, and that makes that person become more like you, like a host adopting to the new role in the park.
Yeah, so that's interesting because, like, some of the stuff that Hale's doing in this episode give me an indication that she knows some of her history, right? Like, she knows who Jake is.
Mm-hmm. And she knows Charlotte Hale is and her role in...
Knows who Charlotte Hale is. Yeah. And a lot of that information is just stuff that could be easily conveyed to anyone by stories, by just telling them, like, okay, here's who Charlotte Hale was. Here was what she did. Here's what her life was like. So it's not necessarily that, like, Charlotte has to be in there in some part, although she definitely could be. It could be more of the case where, like, whoever's in there was just sort of filled in on her story. But only the parts that they knew about, right? There might be information absent, for instance, having a son.
I think there's something to that because, like, the hosts, what made them really tick is their emotional cornerstones. Those are the things that kind of made them who they were. Well, if you take a person and you give them new cornerstones, like a bad breakup with an ex and a son that you have a difficult relationship with. Well, if they've told us in their language that the hosts are very malleable that way and they can be influenced, then it could be that she is becoming Charlotte Hale in a real way. Like, she's sharing her cornerstones, so fuck, she's starting to become Charlotte. Maybe we're wrong about the data being there. It's just like it's literally a fake it till you make it story. John continues, I had this thought and it got me thinking, if Serac is just a projection of Robo Hobo, an avatar it uses in the real world, and if what Dolores said about Rehoboam having created a mirror world, a composite of the real world, and if that composite is running a full simulation, there's lots of nested if statements here on perhaps millions of people in the real world, and simulations can be run faster than real time, then if Serac is living in that simulation, he's living in the future. I've taken the divergences and warning events we see as existing in the present, that something in the present wasn't acting as predicted, but what if the divergences are the future inside the simulation, then Serac has to leave the future simulation and find the potential causes of future divergences in the present. Interesting.
And he has said that he has created the future, right? Not just predicted it.
Yeah, he's creating present tense. That would explain why he says the war is ongoing. They've already lost, even though no one yet knows it's happening. That would also tie into his little comment of Charlotte Hale about her only having so much time, him knowing about Dolores having the encryption key in her head and everything else he knows. He also reveals that he knew about the whole robot uprising in Westworld and yet did nothing. Like, all he wanted out of it was the park data. Like, as long as that happened, he didn't give a shit. Maybe. Yeah. How does that figure in? Like, if he knew all of that, he should have been able to simulate the end goal. Like, does the host and guest data fundamentally important? Is that what you need to be able to prevent this AI apocalypse? And how so? The fact that
I don't know, man.
Maybe he wants to get the host data more than the guest data because he's having trouble simulating the host more than the real people at this point.
He is definitely.
So John concludes whenever that scene was with Serac that he has with Maeve, he had just learned about Dolores. If he then plugged those variables given to my Maeve into the simulation, maybe he sees a million new possibilities. Not just predictions, but those predictions that are run forward in time through a total global simulation, perhaps millions of times. That's an interesting way you could do kind of time travel without being time travel.
Right.
Yeah.
And they specifically tell us the simulation runs faster, so maybe they're trying to tell us that very subtly.
It's also got like, they had a lot of fun in the Inception movie with the idea of time dilation. And I could see some really cool action scenes where hosts in a simulation are running faster, like controlling outside agents, like, I don't know, 300 riot control robots. And they are like almost like using like the Jedi precognition to like anticipate their, you know, running real time simulations and acting, you know, controlling
like
the robots.
Like a real life bullet time kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the simulated bullet shots happen and they know where exactly they're going to go. And so in real life, the robots react. And
how many simulations do you go till you wash up on a desert shore with an ancient eight? Yeah,
just two.
You hit simulated limbo and two iterations. Holy shit.
Just two.
Damn. I'm going to have to consider that math when I do my calculations. And that will wrap up our podcast for Westworld this week. Lots of new information. Lots of new shit came to light. I'm wondering, because next week promises to reveal who the old friend they're going to visit. Probably going to get into some William.
Super excited for that.
Yeah, because that's going to touch like all the things we've been talking about, the themes of like humans and simulations and being pressed in the flesh. Like he's the nexus of all that.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm wondering if we'll get even more hints because we'll be at the halfway mark next week, too. Mm-hmm. So if you got some more theories, you got some more analysis, you got anything else you want to point out or bring to our attention, please do so at westworld@baldmove.com. Don't forget, every Sunday night, immediately after the 9 p.m. airing on Eastern Standard Time of Westworld, Jim and I take to the mics to do our instant take. If you're a club member, you can watch us record that live and participate in instant talk. Version of that podcast where we use the YouTube chat interface to get your opinions live and on the spot. So you can do that. You can join at club.baldmove.com or just go to baldmove.com if you just want to see the instant take version. And like I said, that'll do it. Westworld.baldmove.com for feedback. We'll be back in just a few days with the instant take and then a week later with the full-blown recap. Until then, I am Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Have a great week.